This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here with Ryan Kennedy, and actually physically in the flesh, Ken Campbell. Actually just touched his hand. I just touched him. He's here in his purpley t-shirt. Looks pretty good. Pretty good. Lots to talk about today.
What about my hair?
The hair looks pretty good, too. Yeah, it's a little more modern. It's less spiky, and it's more like brushed to the side, kind of like mine. So if it looks like my hair, then it's got to be good. So
also, it's gray, not purple.
Nice.
That's another difference.
That's true. Very true.
And again, I just want to reiterate for everyone who's listening, possibly the three best heads of hair in the hockey writing industry
are sitting
in this room right now.
Yeah. That's true.
There's a lot
of thickness. It's a trio of hedgehogs right here, you know? Free agency kicked off on the weekend. A lot happened. A lot of deals were sort of pre-signed, if you will. And there was a huge flurry of activity. And, of course, Ken had to open his can of Coke.
Diet
Coke. I try not to acknowledge it anymore, but...
trying to get an endorsement, man.
Yeah, I know. But it's hard to tell now, but let's see if we can figure it out. Let's sort through the wreckage and decide if there was a winner and a loser, maybe multiple teams, but who right now do you think got the most better? Is that correct grammar?
Well, okay.
Got the betterest?
Okay, can we, like, do the winners have to be teams, or can the winners be, like, backup goalies?
Well, I mean...
Backup goalies were winners.
That's true.
Anders Nielsen got... He's a 27-year-old who's played 78 games, and he got a 2-year deal worth $5 million.
Yeah, Jonathan Bernier.
Steve Mason got $4 million for being bad lately.
He's going to start. Mason's going
to
start.
It's like all these goalies, they all went to, like, they've kind of played musical chairs with them, and they all ended up with teams, even though they had bad years, and they just went to different places.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's a huge win for them.
Yeah, Jonathan Bernier got $2.75 million, and Brian Elliott got $2.5 million. But to me, I mean, if we're talking winners, the one team I think that had bad goaltending and actually addressed it instead of just subbing in another mediocre guy was the Dallas Stars. Yeah. So to me, they're the obvious flashy winner. Even though personally, I mean, yes, they got Mark Methot, but I think Mark Methot was carried a lot by
the fly
chasing me.
I'm
spotting
at
the fly while I'm talking.
You know what flies are attracted to?
I'm like Pigpen from Charlie Brown. Who, by the way, I thought Pigpen was a girl all this time because
really?
I thought the dirt was just Pigpen's hair.
Wow.
But anyways, I digress. Mark Methot, I think, was insulated by Eric Carlson, so I don't think that's a huge upgrade on the blue line other than, you know, he's a good voice in the room. But you can't ignore it. Radulov comes in. He's going to play on the first line with Sagan and Jamie Benn. That could be the best line in the NHL. It's got a real chance to be.
Scary. It could be scary.
Scary. You got Martin Hanzel, who's going to be, I guess if Spezza's still there, or Martin Hanzel's your third line center. And he's great as a third line center. I wasn't crazy about the idea of Hanzel as a second line center. Mm-hmm. And you got Ben Bishop. So the Stars, to me, are the obvious in-your-face kind of winner off the top of my head.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And you look at some of the young kids they have coming up. I think their blue line is going to be a lot better this year. John Klingberg, I if he's sort of like a baby Carlson, then maybe Mark Methot can be a good partner for him. And, maybe Methot was all a product of Carlson, but maybe he can be okay if he's with a guy who's kind of a baby Carlson. Mm-hmm. But you have Esa Lindell coming up. You have Julius Honka. You know, you have a couple of veterans, you know, on that back end now where they're a lot more solid just in terms of bodies than they were last year. And then, of course, with Bishop being in net, even if that defense core isn't airtight, you've got a guy that can bail you out. Totally agree with Hanzel as well. You know, you have to build down the middle these days. Mm-hmm. And... Mm-hmm. With Sagan, Spezza, and Hanzel, I mean, that's pretty potent. And the best thing is, too, you know, if Spezza loses a step, Hanzel steps up, and maybe Spezza becomes your third line, and sort of a different look there. You've given yourself options, and with Radulov, clearly they're all in, and I think it's going to be fun to see what they can do.
I think, you know, as far as winners, you have to talk about the team that got the best free agent out there. And that's the New York Rangers. And it makes them a winner because they really defied their past in a lot of ways. And they just went out and got the best guy, and they knew that he wanted to play there, and they used that hammer as leverage. And they only gave him 4 years. They didn't give him a ridiculous contract. It didn't end up being a big stupid deal that would have you know, put them in a paralysis situation for, you know, the next 5 years or whatever. It was a very reasonable deal, and they knew that he wanted to go there. They knew probably in a lot of ways that they were negotiating against themselves. And they took advantage of it. And I think that, you know, I mean, when you get the best guy, that's one thing. When you get the best guy on a really, like, reasonable contract, that's even better.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way, Kenny. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how he fits into that blue line. I think he's a great hockey fit, even money aside. And I think he'll probably end up being paired with Ryan McDonough. And that's going to be one of the best skating tandems in the NHL. Even Brady Shea on that back end really improved. They did a great job re-signing Brendan Smith as well, who was sort of sneaky good as well. So to me, I think the Rangers are going to be dangerous. And the other thing that I really love about that contract is, you know, Shattenkirk's only 28 years old. And for perspective, I was tweeting this before, the deal's so good. Like, when the deal's done, Shattenkirk's going to be 32. Like, Duncan Keith's 33 right now. Mark Giordano's 33 right now. And they're still very effective defensemen, right? Yeah. So it really just puts into perspective just how nice that deal is. And they're going to get Shattenkirk right at the end, the meat of his prime years.
So maybe now you turn around and you say, like, Duncan Keith's good at 33. What if he's that good at 32 and now they don't have him for another 3 years? They could have had him. And so now it's a bad
contract. They're one of the losers. I'm going to throw out another winner here. The contract itself obviously was bad on paper, but what it signified, I think, made the Toronto Maple Leafs a winner. And Patrick Marleau was pretty open with the fact that he couldn't pass up the chance. This feels weird to even say when we're talking about the Leafs, but to join a contender.
Yeah.
And to me, I mean, I think there's more to that contract than meets the eye. I think it's quite possible in year three that Marleau ends up on Robidoux Island and the Leafs do some, you know, magic with the salary cap. And it's clear the goal is to have Marleau for those first 2 years when Matthews and Mitch Marner on their entry-level deals.
And Nylander.
And Nylander, I think, is going to be
his contract
sooner,
will
right?
be – it'll be in effect by that time too, won't it? No, I guess
he's 1 year ahead. But and to me, it signifies that the Leafs realize they're in a window right now and that they're suddenly a destination. The fact that they could not just lure a regular UFA, but they lured Patrick Marleau, a lifetime shark from the franchise, the only franchise he's ever known. It's a pure comfort, and his good buddy Joe Thornton. It's really a testament, I think, to how the Leafs are suddenly perceived. So in that way, I think they're a winner.
I don't think it was that egregiously bad of a contract. You know, Marlowe's still got game. This guy is still a good player. And the best thing about Patrick Marleau is he can skate. And if you can skate, you can play in this league. And if you can skate and keep up with Austin Matthews, all you pretty much have to do is put your stick on the ice.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going to get yourself 50, 60 points probably. So I don't think it's that bad of a deal. But I share your concern about year three of the deal. Because that's when they're going to have to pay the piper on a lot of these other guys. You know, as you say, Marner and Matthews will be, their extensions will kick in by then. By that time, Nylander will have probably signed an extension. You know, they're going to have to do some juggling to see how they're going to be able to fit all that in. But to me, I mean, you know, the Leafs used to do this shit all the time. They used to be the prime destination for 30-something guys who were really good in other places and then came here and kind of played out the rest of their careers. And in some of the cases, it worked. It worked with Curtis Joseph. It worked with Ed Belfour. It worked with a lot of guys. Alexander McGillney was great when he came here. And I don't think necessarily it means that this guy's just going to kind of fade off into the sunset. He's a good player and he's a character guy. He hasn't missed a game in 8 years. Like, he's missed, like, 13 games or something in his career. Like, he's a player, and I think he can still play. And and the best thing about him is he can skate, and he can score, and he can create offense. And I don't think that's a terribly bad thing when you've got a team, you know, you're bringing in a veteran guy. I don't think he's going to be the captain, or I don't think he's going to be the, like, leader or anything. But a veteran guy who's been there before, I don't know if it's that terrible of a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed like an overpay to me, but on the other hand, you're at a position right now where you can overpay a couple of veterans because you've set yourself up so well with that young core. I think there's still one big move left for the Leafs, and that's to get another defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably going to have to be by trade, and perhaps that's where Marleau fits in, where they know they're going to have to pony up somebody like a James Van Riemsdyk, whose name seems to be out there all the time. Although I would hold on to JVR, just because I think he's great too.
Great deal.
Yeah, he's a really good player. I don't know. I would prefer, if I'm the Leafs, I would prefer to move somebody else, but I also recognize how the market is. But I think that's how this all fits in, is that the Leafs are kind of playing with house money for the next 2 years, and might as well go for it. We saw what Austin Matthews did in year one.
Well, and I think what it indicates too, Matt, is that, the 5-year plan is not a 5-year plan anymore. And I mean, I think the first indication to me of that was at the trade deadline this year when they gave up a second rounder for Brian Boyle. That was not supposed to happen this early. And when Lou Lamoriello was hired and when Mike Babcock were hired, I asked Brendan Shanahan that very thing. I said, are you going to, because we've seen this happen a million times with the Leafs. And he said, no, it's not going to happen. We don't want it to happen. We have no desire for it to happen. But I think they see that, everything has just been kicked up a notch and accelerated by the way some of these kids have played. And, they're getting, they've got a top-notch goaltender. They've got all the pieces in place. And the East is very winnable. I mean, I could see the Leafs going far into the playoffs next year in the Eastern Conference.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that. It kind of is a good segue to our losers, the teams that did the worst on the weekend. And I think the Washington Capitals jump off the page. And that's a big reason why the East is suddenly wide open. I mean, they lost Justin Williams. They had to really overpay TJ Oshie. They lost Carl Alzner. They traded away Marcus Johansson. And then GM Brian McClellan is pretty much saying out loud, we're sort of doing what a championship team does and has to dismantle, except we didn't win the championship. Yowza.
Wow.
I don't know.
Do you want to hear that? Do you
yikes.
Like, yikes. Okay, yeah. Here, I'll just open my legs a little more and you kick me in the nuts again. Like, that's what the Washington Capitals fans must be saying when they hear something like that.
Yeah, and there's just so many missteps. Even going back to the expansion draft and losing Nate Schmidt, who was a very good up-and-coming defenseman for them. I mean, you knew you were going to lose Carl Alzner, and I know there was talks about him signing in Vegas, which I'm sure would have been optimal for Washington because he would have counted as their expansion draft pick. The Oshie thing, and I wrote about this today, you didn't have to re-sign TJ Oshie.
No.
Scoring wingers are the easiest thing to find in the NHL, and for them to pay that much on a long-term deal, it basically meant losing Marcus Johansson, who had pretty much the same offensive output this year, but is 4 years younger, plays a great two-way game, and
makes way less money.
Makes
is
yeah,
on a good
1.1
contract for 2 years. I'm scratching the friggin' dandruff out of my hair on that one. I don't get it. I don't get it.
And as I was saying, I think the big problem is Washington fell in love with their own players. So, you bring in Oshie, you really like him, well, we got to re-sign him. Well, you didn't. Dmitry Orlov, who's a decent defenseman, but not fantastic at this point. He's got some good upside, but $5.1 million
for Dmitry Orlov? He got paid Morgan Riley money, he got more than Roman Josi got on the same contract.
He's making more than Roman Josi.
Yeah, Roman Josi's hugely underpaid, though.
Very true.
Oh, God, he might be one of the most underpaid guys in the NHL.
Yeah, but take that lesson if you're watching it and say to Dmitry Orlov, well, look, Roman Josi's only making $4 million.
Yeah.
You weren't even top four in our minutes played last year. You don't kill penalties. So how much should we really be paying you? I'm not saying don't re-sign him. Obviously you re-sign him, but maybe for $4 million, $3.5 million, things like that. You still have to sign Andrei Burakovsky, and you still need to sign Philip Grubauer, who was one of the better backups in the league last year. You have 15 players under contract. You only have $8.5 million to play with. You've already lost Marcus Johansson for basically nothing, a second and a third round pick. Like, what? You didn't win last year, and now you lost, five of your good players. Yeah. Like, where is
and
this
Kevin
going?
And Kevin Shattenkirk's gone, too. Let's not forget.
Yeah.
I know he didn't do great, but
you know
it's still
what,
a big
you know
body.
You guys, I just think that this is all comes down to a fundamental flaw in the way they've built this roster. And it starts with number 8, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they have built this team around him, when in reality, I think we're all coming to the conclusion, at least at this point in his career, that He's not the alpha dog.
Yeah.
He's not the alpha dog. He's not going to be leading this team to anything. But they still continue to make moves built around this guy and trying to win now for this guy, and it's not working.
I would say the one really good move they made was the Evgeny Kuznetsov contract. $7.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's the guy you should build around. Like, for me, Kuznetsov should be your captain. It's not going to happen because, obviously, Ovi's there and he's quite beloved. And fair play. But that's the kind of contract you should be signing. That's the guy where you recognize you have a lot of talent, you have a lot of drive and passion in Kuznetsov, and he should be the one you build around, and you should always build around centers. You should never build around wingers anyways.
Yeah.
Also, Brooks Orpik. I can't believe he's still a member of the Washington Capitals. Like, when he signed that contract, it was like, okay, well, you need Brooks Orpik for a year or two, and then we understand he's going to need the term, but he's not actually going to be there for the duration of his contract. He is.
Yeah.
He's still making 5.5. And again, this is just hamstringing them because you can't have a number six defenseman making 5.5 a year.
A movable contract. And you could argue that Brooks Orpik cost Kevin Shattenkirk money because I think he dragged down that pairing. I feel like Kevin Shattenkirk should call him and be like, dude, I would have gotten $1 million bucks more if I had played with a different partner in the playoffs, but together we made the opposite of magic. I think another loser I want to throw out there, it's not necessarily in every aspect. I mean, Montreal did just, you know, they retained Carey Price. They probably had to do it. They did get Jonathan Drouin.
They got Carl
Alsner. But to me, in a way, I see Montreal as losers because you can sort of see the beginning of the end of a certain window for this franchise, and there's an air of desperation. The fact they had to pay Carey Price so much money, and to me, bringing Carl Alsner, I said it on the last podcast, it was almost like we have to make a move like this just to show Carey Price that we want to win still. Mm-hmm. But analytically, Alsner is an overrated defenseman. Shea Weber, you know, he's getting near the end of his prime, and you get Drouin, but then you lose Radulov. So, like, what have you really gained on the offensive end? And you mortgaged away Mikhail Sergachev. So to me, Montreal might not be a worse team on the ice this year, but I just think in terms of the long-term vision, I don't think this group is going to win a cup.
No.
And if this is the roller coaster, they're just at the top and they're going to start their descent over the next few years. So if I'm a Habs fan, I'm not too excited about what's happening.
I wouldn't be either, and I'm not sure they're going to be even that good this year. Mm.
They don't have a number one center.
Yeah, this is a team, like, they don't know what they want to be, it seems. Like, what's the identity of the Montreal Canadiens? Can anybody tell me what they stand for, what their identity is, and what they're all about?
Yeah. Middle line wingers,
and a great
forwards.
Goalie. And a great goalie.
A great goalie and an old and slow defense.
But to me, it's like, it seems as though, and I tend to agree with what you're saying, Matt, is that Marc Bergevin kind of rolled the dice on this team and had a vision of it, and it failed in a spectacular manner. And now it's just kind of, you're trying to herd cats, right? And you're trying to make something of this. And I don't see really good days. I don't see dark, dark days like they were in the early 2000s for the Canadiens. But they're not good.
I see a lot of wild card berths and first round losses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I see a nursing home in 3 years. Like, that team, they're committing all this money to players that aren't going to be good in 2-3 years.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a big problem, especially in the division they're in. Can you imagine Carl Alsner and Shea Weber trying to track down Jack Eichel and Matthews and Nylander and Eric Carlson?
Nikita Kucherov.
Even, like, this year, never mind 2 years from now?
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be a graveyard.
Yeah, just go to the outside, boys, and skate around.
Yeah.
Just beat them to the outside as much as you can.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly. If we look at the remaining UFAs out there, there aren't too many big-ticket guys, but who are you looking at that's still potential impact signing, and where do you think you'd want to see them go?
Well, I mean, I guess you'd have to say Jeremy Jagr still at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, he can still produce offense. He can still be that sort of leader guy that, you know, shows everybody how to be a good pro and everything. I don't think he can be a top-line player on a good team. I don't think he can play in the playoffs anymore. I think the speed and the chaotic nature of the playoffs is just past. He can't keep up. But, I mean, he would be a guy that I would think, you know, would be someone that still has some value and still can help a team, maybe a middle-of-the-road kind of team.
Yeah, I mean,
who knows? Maybe he'll end up in Montreal too. Maybe a guy like that.
Now if they lost Radulov,
yeah, exactly.
That could be the fit. Yeah.
I feel like Yager could do one more year in Florida, and it wouldn't be the worst thing. Just they've got those young guys. They've got some talent. I think that would be okay. And obviously, the other big name is Ilya Kovalchuk, and what's going to happen with him? We're starting to hear like Columbus might be a possibility. It's pretty interesting because. We can assume that he'll have a Radulov-esque impact. You know, they're kind of similar in that both of them played in the NHL before, so they know what the score is over here. There's not going to be any kind of adjustment period or a very short one at that. But it really comes down to term, dollars, and, of course, getting his rights from New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Kovalchuk's a different story altogether. I think he would attract a different group of suitors, but I'd like to see Yager land in a place like Nashville.
I was thinking that,
yeah,
too.
Because
exactly.
they're sort of still. I mean, they're not, even though they made it all the way to the final, I think, you know, there's not necessarily a bankable top flight contender yet. I think everything went right. But they're still, you know, they have some problems down the middle. I know they brought in Bonino and they lost James Neal's scoring. So to me, Yager would be a nice, easy replacement and, you know, on a short-term deal, I think it would be a pretty good fit there as well.
Put him on a line with Scott Hartnell and, like, great hair, great beard. And the best thing is you could just sit there and go get something to eat while they're on the ice when they start in their own end, and you could get your hot dog and pop and come back, and they won't even be in the other end yet.
All right, let's go to some reader questions here. We got a whole bunch. We'll see how many we can get to. I guess we'll start with one that sticks to the Preds right now. It's from Carly. Where will Mike Fisher end up, and why wouldn't the Preds re-sign their captain? I'll start with this one. I think there's going to be no re-signing possible because I think Mike Fisher's probably going to retire. To me, the fact that they signed Bonino, who plays a pretty similar role to Fisher, sends the message that Fisher is not coming back. Or that they're still somehow going to try and find money to pursue a Matt Duchene or something like that and then push Bonino down the depth chart. But to me, I think you have insider knowledge if you're making that signing of Bonino if you're the Predators. And Fisher is in his late 30s. I don't know. I predict that he hangs him up.
I think a lot of this depends on what the Nashville Predators want to be. And do they want to be a budget team or do they want to be a cap team? Because if they want to be a cap team, they could sign Mike Fisher. No problem. They've got like 21 million, I think, in cap space, and, you know, Frederick Gauthier, Pontus Aberg, like a bunch of restricted free agents to sign, and that's about
it. But Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson are two of the RFAs you got to sign.
Right, yeah. That's true. Yeah. Right. Okay. So yeah. So, but I think they could still do it. I forgot about those two guys. Thanks.
And Victor Johansson wants $8.5 million.
Yeah.
Oh no. But still.
But I think you're right, Matt. I think it'll be a case of Mike Fisher will be a Predator for life now. I would think he'll know that it's time, and he'll get a front office job. He'll be like assistant GM or something like that. They'll sort of groom him along as an executive. But, you know, and I mean, it's Mike Fisher's a nice player. He's a nice player. He's a good guy. Can't do anything when it comes up. Like, you might as well just not have another player out there when you get the puck over the opponent's blue line because he can't create offense. He's a good, you know, he's still pretty good in his own end and he can still, you know, show the way, but you got to have more than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it's not Nashville, the only kind of idea I had was like maybe Los Angeles where he could be a third or fourth line center, and with Carrie Underwood, you know, lots of studios and things in L.A. that I'm sure the music industry would be good for her there if she had to venture out. So
that's true. That's
the only other fit I see. And, I mean, the Kings, I don't see them going anywhere but down. So
yeah,
it's not a ringing endorsement by me or on either side. I'm just saying I can see it.
Yeah. This question's from Bring Back the Whale. So maybe this person's from Hartford. I don't know. It's just a guess. The question is, Duchene, where does he end up and when? Does Sakic back down or does he get what he's asking for?
I think Duchene ends up in Colorado. I really do. I think Sakic has proved beyond any doubt that... Well, do you say it? Do we say it?
Politely,
Yeah, he's a little out of his element. A little bit out of his element in this.
A little bit.
And the thing that I'd be most worried about, if I'm a fan of the Colorado Avalanche, is that Sakic's going to be making this trade. I would be a little worried about that. And I just think he kind of put it out there. He didn't get what he wanted. He sort of overshot the market, and now there's going to be a reset, and I think he's going to be sticking around for a while.
Yeah, I mean, the big problem is that some of the players that I think they would have liked to acquire in exchange for Duchesne are off the market now.
Yep.
Travis Hamonic's in Calgary now. Yep. You can't trade with the Islanders, who would have been a pretty nice option, and they got Jordan Eberle. I mean, it would be nice to get them both, but I think the Islanders are probably pretty happy where they are right now. You look at Columbus, well, they got Panarin now. And, you know, I mean, they were willing to give up Ryan Murray. It seems like that was a possibility, but obviously things didn't quite get done. There was other parts. I think Gabriel Carlson's name was involved there on the Columbus side, where the Avs were inquiring about him. But now if I'm Columbus, I look at my roster and say, like, well, you know, like, we got a pretty good sniper in Panarin, and we got some nice guys coming up. Let's just sit tight. I think that's the problem, is that... you know, the things you want are no longer available. You kind of waited too long.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm keeping my eye on Montreal, because I think Bergevin has dug himself enough of a hole now. He's in too deep. Like, he can't stop now. He's like, he's all in on this crazy run of this summer. They lost Radulov. It's a PR nightmare. So I wonder, I mean, we know it still seems like Alex Galchenyuk's days are numbered. Why don't you just trade him one for one? Galchenyuk for Duchesne.
Who
wins the deal?
Montreal wins that deal.
I would say maybe it's the opposite, because Galchenyuk's a lot younger. So the fact that we have differing opinions clearly means it's even.
Well, no, we haven't heard from Mr. Kennedy.
Well, I just think that's kind of a pointless trade, because both teams need defense.
Yeah,
basically just trading like one pretty good player for another pretty good player.
Yeah, that's the only thing with Montreal, is they don't have any good young defensemen left to give up.
Unless you think Matt Duchesne could be a number one center.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
but then
the same group doesn't think Alex Galchenyuk can be a number one center, so like, you know, what are we dealing with here? And if you're Colorado, you sort of say, like, well, no, like, Matt Duchesne's been very good for us. Mm-hmm. We need defense. But we somehow hate Tyson Barrie. I don't understand that either.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Next one's from Austin Gagne. Who are the most likely candidates to have breakout seasons next year? Mm-hmm. I'll kick this one off. I'm going to say Andre Burakovsky in Washington. Just out of necessity, because he's always been stuck in that second line to third line left wing position. But with Marcus Johansson gone, there's no choice for Washington to promote Burakovsky into the top six role. And he's got a lot of talent. Like, I could see him absolutely breaking out, scoring 25 to 30 goals, and he's going to get the chance this year.
Okay, don't laugh, okay? You're not allowed to laugh when I say this name. Yanni Gourde.
I laughed because
you know what?
You said don't laugh.
Yanni Gourde is like still considered a rookie in the NHL. He won't be 26 until December. He played 1 year of 20 games, 1 year of two games or something like that. So he qualifies for the Calder Trophy. I think this guy could, in the right situation in Tampa, with playing with the right players, could be a contender for the Calder Trophy next year. He had 27 points in 22 games in the American Hockey League playoffs this year. He's a guy who can play. He can play, and he's kind of been stuck in a logjam there in Tampa and hasn't really been able to prove himself. And I think if he gets a chance, he could be a guy that really has a nice little season.
That's the guy. If I was Vegas, that's the guy I would have taken.
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of Jason Garrison. So there you go.
I'm going to go with Oliver Bjorkstrand in Columbus. I think that... Just organically, I think he's going to be better, and he's got that high-end skill where it's something the Jackets need up front. And, you know, bringing in Panarin, obviously they're going to have a bit of a different look. I think that kind of opens up some opportunities for Bjorkstrand. I think he's slowly, you know, he needs to gain the trust of John Tortorella, and if he can do that, Columbus has seen what he can do in big-time situations, because he was excellent in the Calder Cup. for the Lake Erie Monsters, now the Cleveland Monsters, when they won the title 2 years ago. So I'm pretty interested to see what Bjorkstrand can do.
Well, I think that's it for today, everybody. It's been a wild season, and we'll be back next week to talk more off-season. I'm sure there'll be some more signings, and we will discuss them then.